Welcome back to the American Heritage Podcast. My guest today is Joseph P. Solosky. He's a Libertarian candidate for state representative in Pennsylvania's 81st district. Normally, this show is pretty apolitical, but I wanted to give you guys a breakdown of what it is this guy stands for, because he has some pretty interesting ideas on how to help America long-term. Some of those ideas are things like lowering tax rates, getting rid of full-time legislature, and things like that. I'm all about helping America, and this guy's got some interesting ideas, and I had a great conversation with him about politics and philosophy. I hope you enjoy. My guest today is Joseph Solosky, Libertarian candidate for state representative in Pennsylvania 81st District. Joe, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Seth. It's wonderful to be here.
Appreciate it. So you are running for political office. What made you decide to take that challenge on, especially as a libertarian?
Well, that's the exciting part. I actually did this a year ago, my first election ever. I switched to the Libertarian Party after being a Republican for 40 years. For a lot of years, I thought they actually had the right ideas and were going the right direction. But ever since the late 1980s, I've watched this constant deterioration in the Republican Party. And in 2016, when I saw they were about to nominate Donald Trump, I decided I had to jump off this ship.
Yeah.
The Libertarian Party was the perfect place for me. I realized that their ideals, their principles, matched mine. So it was an easy decision for me and a perfect fit. After I did that, I started to get fellow libertarians involved here in Center County, Pennsylvania, right in the center of the state. State College, Pennsylvania is the most notable town. And started to get the ball rolling here. And I got involved with the state Libertarian Party also. I was their treasurer for 2 years. During that period of time, I decided we need to have another voice here in the 81st district where I live. You know, we had a first term Republican representative, and I wasn't particularly impressed with the gentleman. So I decided to go up against him. It was a fantastic experience. While I lost, I will be running again next year, hoping to build upon my prior experience and hopefully to have a lot better results.
Yeah, well, that's pretty awesome. You know, one of the things, and this is just me being full disclosure, that I've always had issue with libertarians is there's a lot of people who have libertarian philosophies and they like to talk about libertarianism, but nobody really wants to do anything about it. And, you know, they have these high level ideas of like ending the Fed and stopping, you know, the policing of America and no taxes. And, you know, those are cool ideas, but there are 5,000 steps that need to happen between right now and those lofty goals. And one of those steps is winning local elections.
Absolutely.
So I'm glad that you're taking that to heart and running with that. That's pretty awesome to see. So, what do you think that your platform is going to be? Because Republicans probably are pretty prominent in your area if they elected a Republican. How are you going to compete?
Well, I tell you what, the 81st district, Seth, here in Pennsylvania, is a very Republican district, and they like their hometown boy. They truly do. It's tough. It's going to be tough to compete, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't. Let's face it, we have the better ideas as libertarians. If we can be constantly promoting personal liberty, if we can be in that same process educating people as to what that means for them and be able to illustrate to them the deterioration that's been going on in this country for the last 100 years, we start to get a toehold. Last year, when I ran, 1% of the vote. We had the Republican who typically got 65, 66, 67%. He got 62. The Democrat, another nice guy, he ended up getting 35% of the vote. I got 3. It was a hard-earned 3. But those 3%, those people believed in me. The message resonated with them. And it being my very first campaign. Yeah, I think I probably had a lot of weaknesses in my approach and how I was reaching out to people. There's a lot of gaps where I probably could have had a lot better result. I'll be looking forward to closing those gaps and meeting a lot more people, getting this message out there this upcoming year.
Yeah, no, I wish you the best of luck with that. So when you tell people you are a libertarian, I can assume that the majority of people, either one, don't know what that is, or two, have in their mind an assumption of what libertarianism is. What do you tell people a libertarian is?
When I getting started with your comparison there, I think most of them fall into the second category. They have a picture at this point, especially people who have known me for any period of time at all. I point out to them that, look, this government has grown too onerous over the last 100 years, and it has become that way in small steps, incidentally,
right,
painlessly to most people. And we're now to a point where, if we're not careful, we're letting the government own us. And we don't even realize it, or we're letting them do it. We're being complacent. I'm trying to throw that switch in people and point out to them, we're for all your freedoms all the time. We are for everything that you truly want, but the other two parties are not promoting for you. They're actually promoting taking those things away from you incrementally, slowly at a time. And when people are willing to listen, they get it. They not only get it, they support me, they vote for me. One of the biggest thrills I had last year was meeting people at candidate forums that I didn't already know, and shaking their hands and them looking me in the eye and saying, you've got my vote. You earned my vote tonight. I'm like, wow, that's got to be the biggest honor any candidate could ever have, especially when you're running on principle. The other two parties don't run on principle. They're just promising everything, giving everything away that isn't theirs, that they don't have. They just want to control and power.
Right.
That's how I try to promote it to people one-on-one or me speaking to a group.
Yeah, I think that's a good strategy. In my opinion, I think that the Republican Party now and conservatives are ripe for the picking to be converted into libertarians. I don't feel the same way about the liberal left. I don't think that. When I think libertarian, me personally, that is what I envision the founding fathers essentially were, right? A live and let live, manage yourself, take care of your own responsibilities first. And yes, as long as you can do that, you can preserve and keep the republic, which was very minimal at that time. But they knew better than anybody that if we lost the ability for self-regulation, that the government would be more than happy to step in. And like you said, incrementally, slowly and surely, that's exactly what's happened.
Absolutely. And I think
conservatives are hip to that, whereas I think liberals are happy with that. Because at the end of the day, I get the sense that a lot of these guys like Bernie Sanders and AOC and Pelosi, you know, they want the archetypal power system to be preserved at all costs, and they want to be the head of it, which is their main,
yes,
main motivation, not for the good of the people, because they want to be in control. So, would you agree that, you know, you think that the people that we should be going after are more of the conservatives rather than the liberals?
Well, yes, but I've seen both, and I find it really interesting when someone from the left jumps over to libertarianism. I usually take them aside and say, what was it that got you? You know, and usually they have a sense of our personal freedoms, you know, unwarranted searches, for example, or the legalization of something like all drugs, maybe just marijuana, which is already getting a head of steam, things like that. Those sometimes capture them and they realize this is the place for me. But I do agree with you. I think we draw more from the conservative side. And I'm the perfect example. You know, you're looking at an old Reagan Republican here.
Yeah.
I was a Republican for 40 years. But as I said, I got tired, Seth. Every every presidential election, I'd look at the group of people that were running and I'd say, that's the person I like. And then I noticed, or if not that person, then that one and that one and that one and that there. And the Republican Party was always nominating my fourth or fifth choice. I realized this is not the party for me. They want something totally different than what I thought their principles were. I know what my principles were. And well, you know that old Ronald Reagan quote about, I didn't leave the Democrat Party. They left me. That's why he said, well, it was the same way with me. You know, when I saw the direction this party was going, I thought, there's no way I can stay on board here. And then, a little bit more about me that you may not know, I was asked by the local county Republican Party this year to run for county commissioner. And after meeting with a couple of them, I thought, yes, I could do this because I'd love to affect policy. But what I found out was they really didn't want me. They wanted what they called their safe candidates. And I eventually was no longer in any good graces with the local Republican Party. They only liked me when they didn't have anyone running. Once they had one of their so-called safe candidates, I was gone. Right. And I realized I should have never even gone there. I'm a libertarian at heart, and I think that may have been part of my undoing. They knew it, and they weren't on this train. So I'll go without them because there's better things to be accomplished here.
No, absolutely. You know, and I kind of identify with what you said about the Republican Party leaving you. You know, I'm only 32, so I don't remember the Reagan years, which were kind of the gold standard of the GOP from what I gather.
Truly.
It seems like it has been downhill since then. But even in my lifetime, since I've been somewhat politically active, I remember when the Republicans got the House and the Senate under the Obama presidency, and they, you know, we're going to do all these conservative things, pass all these bills, and they didn't do a single thing. Not one. I made a list. You know, they, you know, Affordable Health Care Act, you know, they didn't do anything there. They didn't do anything for tax reform. They didn't do anything to reel in any kind of government spending. You know, they just increased it more. So it's like,
yes,
oh my God, I get it now. Well, you know, it's,
you're seeing the same thing under the Trump administration here.
Right.
They had control of things for 2 years. Did they repeal Obamacare? No. Have they reined in government spending? Have they cut spending? No. Have they reeled in the government debt? You know, we owe more money than ever before. And it's getting to a point where you're thinking, we're at a great tipping point. One of these days, if we're not careful, the United States of America is going to have a going out of business sale, and it ain't going to be pretty.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I see the writing on the wall right now. When I look at foreign policy, you know, because that's kind of what I nerd out about, you know, I see the need for gold standard has never been greater. And I see Russia and China and places like Iran and formerly Venezuela, you know, trying to emphasize the need for their own central banks or a network between them. And it comes back to the U.S. reserve currency, you know, the USD being the world's reserve currency. And they're preparing for the inevitable day that, you know, America won't be the top dog, at which point we've got nothing left to fall back on because
bingo,
that's it. Without a gold standard here in America, once the demand dries up internationally, which it will, and there are people actively trying to do that, we've got nothing left. So
absolutely right.
You're right. When we're at the tipping point, the time is now. And unfortunately, nobody is serious about it. Whether or not, do you think that they know, or do you think that they're just constantly kicking down the road because they're so short-sighted? Or do you think that they have any kind of idea of the gravity of the situation?
I think you have some that are just kicking it down the road, but I think most of them do understand the gravity of that situation. You know, I think back to the late 80s, early 90s, when George H.W. Bush was constantly talking and promoting a new world order. Well, guess what? One of these days when the United States cannot make its debt payments and you're going to have China, our biggest creditor or lender, looking at us and saying, hey, we're calling the shots now. everything's going to change. And that's what I look at down the road. If we're not careful, we're risking losing our sovereignty. We may actually find out too late, with the luxury of hindsight, that we sold our sovereignty, and then there's nothing left to do about it. That'll be a sad day.
Yeah, that will be too, because, you know, in the course of human history, when you owed a debt and you were any kind of government body and you could not pay the debt, you usually transferred your land in payment of that debt. So, you know, it's a foreseeable possibility, you know, that they may come calling, and that's the only thing we have left to pay the bills with.
Yep. That's absolutely true.
That's highly attractive to China, with a billion people crammed onto, you know, the shoreline, basically, for the most part.
I mean, not that I ever want to see it happen, but you have to admire China's patience. They are looking at this situation and simply waiting us out. It's frightening when you think about it that way.
Yeah. Well, one thing that they have going for them is they are Chinese, right? You know, if you live in China, you're Chinese. That's your national identity. They're one. You know, and the same reason that socialists kind of worship Scandinavia, you know, you're Norwegian, you're Finnish, you're Danish, and, you know, you're Swedish, you're Icelandic. And it's easier to get people on the same page when they're all one people, right? And in America, we have 100 different ethnicities and 100 different languages.
Yes.
A little tougher to get on board with any kind of real, you know, long-term program. The only real long-term program I think you could sell is liberty. You know, that's it. But, you know, that diversity, you know, that's in no way do I make that out to be a bad thing, because I think that's our saving grace.
And
that's,
I agree completely with that.
The only thing that prevents us from having a Joseph Stalin or an Adolf Hitler, you know, because then again, you had your homogenous culture, right?
Yeah.
It was easy to sway the whole population. It goes both ways. Gotcha. So for us, well, you know, it's liberty or bust.
And I look at this, and you were talking earlier, you mentioned a comment, an opinion you have, that things could be ripe for the picking for liberty. That's another reason why I want to make sure I'm in my race here. And we had well over 800 candidates nationwide last year. We want to make sure that we are running in every local and state race possible, because it's all about timing. I've said this about real estate for years. You know how they hammer, it's all about location, location, location. No, it's not. It's about timing. You know, you could have the worst piece of real estate in the world, but if the right person walks through your door at the right moment and they want it, they're buying it. It's timing. Same thing goes with liberty. We need to keep promoting this until we continue to get more traction. And one of these days, I mean, we've seen the media in elections, Seth, where they have totally mispredicted things. This could be the next one where they find out, hey, we were pushing this person, or we were predicting that person, and all of a sudden, all these liberty candidates are getting elected nationwide. What the hell is happening? That will be a wonderful election night. I look forward to that. And that's why myself and other people want to be in their races.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're correct about that. We need more libertarians. When the libertarians were running for president, how did you feel about the Johnson Weld ticket?
I loved him. I absolutely loved him. I looked at, I mean, what were our choices? We had Trump, we had Hillary. There's a couple of dual disasters. And, you know, I often wonder, what if Hillary had won? She probably would be as much or more of a disaster than Trump. Not that I'm trying to give him too much credit. I will where he's earned it. Every now and then the guy's done this right or that right, but it hasn't been significant. The big things he's needed to do, he's failed miserably. Gary Johnson, you know, he and Bill Weld, they were pushing liberty from a great perspective. I love the fact, and I remember mentioning this at the state meeting of the Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania. When I was standing up to speak as their treasurer, I pointed out, these guys loaned us their credibility, which was true. I liked those guys. There wasn't anything bad about them. And I look at today, you know, I could look at anybody that, whether they love Trump, hate Trump, love Hillary, hate Hillary. I can sit here and look at them and say, so tell me, given what you've seen happen in the last 2-3 years, if Gary Johnson had been elected, how would you feel now?
Thanks for listening to the show. Be sure to check out the new website at www.AmericanHeritagePodcast.com. There you can find blog articles that I write, and also there's a tab for merchandise. There you can find new shirts that I have. I have one on right now. It's called the Max Effort, and it features an F-105 Thunder Chief dodging an SA-2 North Vietnamese anti-aircraft missile over the Ho Chi Minh Trail. This shirt was inspired by a conversation I had with Wild Bill in one of the earlier episodes. Be sure to check out that episode and head to the website to pick up your shirt today.
And most all of them are like, you know, that would have been better. No kidding. Yeah. But yeah, you got to give them a chance. They so many people, so much of the American electorate has been duped as this is our choice or that is the choice. We've got to get off this duopoly merry-go-round. And until we can break free of this brainwashing, change is not going to happen. But it's up to people like me, people in the Green Party, several others that need to keep pushing their agenda and make people think, I got options. And then they have to exercise them. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. And once, you know, hypothetically you get elected, you know, what's the first agenda on, because I'm sure you probably have a bucket list of things you would like to do locally. So what's item number one on your bucket list?
Okay. If all of a sudden I wake up in January after a swear-in date and I realize I'm the state representative for the 81st district, the first thing I'm going to recommend is a pay cut for myself and every other state legislator. Do I think it's going to get traction? Probably not, knowing those guys, but it still needs to be promoted because Pennsylvania has one of the only full-time legislatures in the country, and they're currently paying these guys $87,000 a year.
Oh, dang.
And they're doing next to nothing. This is the same legislature that 15-16 years ago raped the state pension system, which was extremely solvent. It was paying out benefits as far as any actuary could see. And today it has about an $80 billion deficit.
Oh my God.
It's horrible, you know, and sooner or later, and I pointed this out, you know, last time I ran, we're going to have to start to cut some expenses, cut costs, allocate more of the operating budget to restore that pension plan, and then get it back on solid footing. That would probably be the second thing I'd do. And then one of my pet items, probably the third thing is Pennsylvania has an estate tax, Pennsylvania estate, what they call the inheritance tax. You know, they tax you all your life, Seth.
Yep.
We have sales tax, we have personal income tax, we've got property taxes. I could go on and on. They're always trying to push a severance tax on the natural gas industry right now, too. That's the sexy new thing. But the inheritance tax has been around for as long as I've been a CPA and longer. And I think it's immoral. You know, you pay taxes all your life. Why? And now you die and you got to pay taxes one last time. Okay. I mean, it just seems so
seems un-American.
Absolutely. I mean, why? I point out to people, why should death give rise to a taxable event? It shouldn't. You should be able to leave all your assets to your heirs or the charities of your choice. Government shouldn't be involved. So there's the top three things. Pay cut for legislators and hopefully roll us back to a part-time organization. 2, make the state pension plan solvent since they raped it. And 3, repeal the inheritance tax.
Yeah, those are all solid things, you know. And when I think about, you know, libertarians running for office, you know, I'm happy to hear those kind of things, you know, because the first words out of your mouth weren't legalization of marijuana and, you know, some of those other things. Not that those are bad, right? I'm not.
No.
Those are good things, and I don't have a problem with those things. But I think it's a sales strategy. If you want to grow libertarianism and get people elected, you gotta get the first words out of your mouth have to be relevant. That's your first impression. And absolutely, if you lead with legalize all drugs, like we're talking about, yeah, your conservatives are going to look at you like, what?
Yeah. And isn't it amazing? You know, and I agree with you that I point out the biggest thing we libertarians have to constantly be pushing is credibility.
Yes.
Credibility. We occasionally, all right, let me amend that. Always have a group of people running for president that just come off as complete nutballs. That doesn't help us. When we had Johnson and Weld, they had credibility. We've got a great couple of people running right now, Kim Ruff and John Phillips. They've got credibility, and I'm hoping they will be our nominee when we have our convention early next year. Everybody else is a circus act. We need to make sure we start getting away from the circus acts. But winning locally, I think, is probably the biggest thing. The more traction we get locally, mm-hmm, then you need to get more traction at the state level. And now you have the electorate looking, going, wait a minute. These guys aren't kidding. They're really serious, and they're making things happen. They're stirring the pot. I pointed out last year that libertarians being elected, we would make Republicans and Democrats better, because we would be there being the constant thorn in the side. We would be the burr under the saddle, and they would have to sooner or later conform to us in order to promote any sort of agenda. And then we're still going to be the watchdogs. Yep. It'd be a win all the way around.
No, I agree. You know, that's a good way to put it. Cause you know, if we had, you know, a one-third scenario, mm-hmm, and libertarians were basically, you know, the Night's Watch, if you're a Game of Thrones fan, you know, it would force the Republicans to be better Republicans, because they would be spending to high heaven, you know, not being conservatives as they should be. And, mm-hmm, you know, libertarians would basically take up, you know, the traditional conservative stances, you know, and then the Democrats would have to be better Democrats and be anti-war, you know. Absolutely. Because we would basically steal that from them. So it would force them all to kind of come to the table, really, if it were an even playing field with, you know, 33% each way.
And I've pointed out to people, well, I actually had a radio host point out to me last year. He says, Joe, you don't even need a third. He says, imagine you get 10, 15%. That is enough impact to exercise some significant influence. And I knew immediately he was right.
Yeah.
Getting to the anti-war thing, I just want to make a comment. There's such a large field of candidates for the Democrats right now. And that's a circus rig show all by itself. Mm-hmm. The one that stands out to me, and I don't agree with her on all things, but it's Tulsi Gabbard.
Absolutely.
Tulsi Gabbard, as you probably already know, she's extremely anti-war, and this is coming from a veteran who served in Iraq. That woman has credibility. She has some great points, some great stances. Now, I'm not completely up to par on where she stands economically for the United States. I need to research that better. But a few of the issues, when it comes to healthcare, when it comes to climate change, I think she's unfortunately a little bit off the rails. But all that said, the Democrats would be extremely wise to nominate her. And if they nominate any of the others in the field, they're basically getting the same thing amongst them all. They're going to be uneventful, and they're going to lose.
Yeah.
The only one that has a shot is probably her.
No, I agree. You know, you probably don't know this, but I'm a veteran as well. And I served in Iraq as well. I was
thank you for your service, sir.
No, I appreciate that. I was 12 years in the military. You know, I was one of those guys that was you can straight up neocon is the best way to put it for, you know, most of my life. And it wasn't until I got back from Iraq that I kind of, you know, the wheels started turning. I had seen enough to kind sure. of make me think, okay, what we're doing now is not working. What we're doing now is probably not even right necessarily. It's just a terrible strategy. Nation building is not a war plan. If you want a nation build, I mean, the military is not the institution you need for that.
Definitely not
at all. It's a
it worked.
Yeah, it does make it worse. And I saw that firsthand, you know, when all of our efforts and even good intentions of the guys on the ground trying to fulfill a terrible, terrible idea, you know, and their efforts going to nothing and in fact making more quote unquote terrorists, you know. Mm-hmm. And so after kind of years of seeing this kind of stuff, you know, it kind of dawned on me, okay, there's got to be a better way. And that was when I kind of stumbled upon some Ron Paul YouTube videos, you know, and that was kind of, you know, okay, this guy makes sense. And I combined that with what I knew to be true with what I witnessed firsthand. And that kind of got me on board with libertarianism.
Cool.
Yeah. So that was kind of my journey. But yeah, Tulsi Gabbard, I think that it's probably the same for her. You know, and I think she's genuine when she says anti-war. And I think that an anti-war Democrat is by far the most dangerous opponent against Donald Trump. And the party has not got wise to that, but that is the winning strategy for a Democrat long term.
Yes. She could make some waves. And when I look at them all, I think she's the only one that has a shot at beating him. Otherwise, they can field any of the others. He will be reelected, unfortunately. As much as I love Kim Ruff and she would be the best candidate of the three, you know, that's the situation. But I will be working for Kim.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I'll have to look some more into that. I was a big Austin Peterson fan.
Okay.
When he was running in the primaries. I thought what the Libertarian Party needs first and foremost is somebody who can articulate the ideas. Consistently. And I was so frustrated because I know Gary Johnson knows the ideas. I know his heart's in the right place, but he cannot public speak. And Bill Weld was always there to kind of answer questions for him. And it was kind of this weird dual presidency type thing they had going on. And it just came off as Bill Weld being the brains and Gary Johnson being just a puppet, you know, and I was really disappointed. So I hope whoever it is can 100% of the time just spit out the ideas and why they're important and how, you know, libertarian philosophy is the best idea.
Absolutely. I know that you talk about eloquence and getting that those ideas across. Larry Sharp in New York.
Oh, I like him, yeah.
Oh, my heavens. I've met Larry. He is an incredible speaker. And he did a good job last year running for governor in New York. He made waves. Libertarian Party's thoroughly entrenched there now because of his efforts. It's a wonderful thing. But he's pretty much come out and said he's, as many people that would love to see him run for president for us, he's come out and said he's not interested right now. You know, maybe that's going to be another year, another election. But as of right now, unless there's a major draft Larry movement, he will be sitting this one out. He must have other plans.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. Well, he's a businessman too, you know, so he's always got to tend to that on the side burner, you know, just in case the political stuff doesn't work out. But, you know, yeah, I was really impressed with him. I listened to a lot of podcasts. I heard him on a couple different podcasts and, you cool. know, I really liked what he had to say. So one thing I got to ask you is like, when you get into office, how are you going to handle the roads, right? Because that's the biggest thing. And obviously, you know, the standard question every libertarian gets, what about the roads? How do you answer that question? Because I'm sure you've been asked.
Sure. I mean, I don't consider that to be a major issue. I really don't. Look, right now, what does the state do? I'm a CPA by background, and I've had in the past a client who did road construction and had jobs that PennDOT let to them. They were primarily highway drainage, but they did a lot of work. Independent construction companies, highway construction companies, are handling the roads. And the state is indeed, from tax dollars, allocating those funds to build those roads. I don't have a problem with that at this point. I think that's not high on my list of priorities. You know, we all want decent roads. Are there other ways of building them? I mean, we've seen situations where people and companies, through voluntary efforts, have repaired or even built segments of roads. It's not often, but it happens. And the results have been good. But at this moment, I'm leaving it alone. I'm saying that is not something that I'm going to be beating my drum about, because I don't think it's going to get much traction.
Yeah, that's smart. And, you know, that kind of like we said earlier, that's so far down the road. You know, I feel like the groundwork for libertarian philosophy needs to be laid before you can really even have those kind of conversations with people. Yeah. And you know, step one is doing what you're doing and just showing people that, you know, to just think liberty-minded. So starting with things like, you know, the death tax and inheritance tax, like that's gold. You know, everybody supports that.
And I'm in a district that is very rural. There's a lot of farming. There's a lot of dairy. You know, there's a lot of dairy farmers in my district that are struggling. And there's a lot of other issues in a rural sense that are tops in their heads. Something like, and you wouldn't think about it, internet broadband. You know, there's a lot of rural districts in my area that have difficulty with internet broadband. And I've been kind of a hands-off kind of guy saying, look, if you want a provider to come in and provide it, there's got to be a market for it. And that's just the way it's going to have to be. I understand your plight. I understand what you want, but it isn't up to government to provide you the internet. And I don't think that always rings well, but I can't sit back and lie and pander. And I'm not about to start now, because it is what it is. As I start in this next campaign, I'm going to pick up where I left off last time. I'm going to fine-tune it every step of the way, now that I have a little bit of experience. And with a little luck, I get a heck of a lot more traction. And the beauty is, you know, you never know what's going to happen in an election. You know, we've seen situations where something, an event happens to this candidate or that candidate, and it turns the results on a dime. I want to make sure that my hat's in the ring and that I'm running. And if all of a sudden people realize Solosky's the best choice here, next thing I know, I might be in the state house being able to have a hand in some great change.
Yeah, no, that's all very awesome. You know, and I'm glad you're running. So are there any other libertarians in your area also running for other office positions?
We are working on getting more people right now, not only this year, but next year involved. We elected one local constable 2 years ago, a gentleman named Casey Grove. He ran a great campaign. A lot of people were against him, but he ran well, and he got a lot of support that he needed right up, you know, and again, timing, right up to election day itself. And the next thing I know, he's elected. Right now, his wife, Michelle, is running for their township supervisor and school board. We're getting this kind of momentum going, and we'll be drawing more people in locally here, both in Center County and in Huntington counties in the 81st district in the next 18 months. And I want to see a lot more people on the ballot.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I need to talk to Casey, because a libertarian constable.
Oh, you love the guy.
He's I have fantastic. So many questions.
He is always, I mean, he does a great job. He executes his duties well, but he's one of these people that I'm not taking any crap. And he's stirring the pot, as is his wife, with the township supervisors. Michelle is fantastic. And she's one of the people on my team. As she runs for office, I'll be supporting her. But I will make sure that they get in touch with you, because I'm sure you would enjoy a conversation with them.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I just have so many questions about that. You know, I can't wait. But yeah, that would be a very interesting conversation. And yeah, I appreciate that. Please send him my way.
I will. I'll make it a point.
Is there anything you want to leave with, any parting thoughts as far as your campaign, how people can get in touch with you? Do you have a website, that kind of thing?
I do. My website was in good shape, and it's in the middle of an overhaul right now, but it is Joe Solosky, joesolowski.com. That's joesolowski.com. I should have been a radio host. Anyway, here I am running for office, Seth. I will be not only putting articles and other alerts on that page, but a lot about me, a lot of the issues, just like I did last year, that I'm running on at the relative to being a state legislator candidate, so that people know what I stand on and what I'm pushing for. So you'll see that back up very, very shortly, should you check. I'm on Facebook, which, again, I don't overemphasize that. Being on Facebook is no way to run a campaign or run an election. But if people need to reach out and find you, I'm there.
All right. Well, hey, I appreciate you coming on and talking about it. It's interesting to talk to somebody who's in the middle of trying to run for office as a libertarian. There's a lot to consider there, but you know, it's an awesome thing. It needs to happen. I hope that we can just clone you and put you everywhere.
Clone me. Yeah. Better talk to my wife. She might think that's not a good idea.
Yeah. Well, maybe she can just sell your copies. You know, there's your capitalism.
Seth, this has been a real pleasure. I hope I get the opportunity to speak with you again as my campaign heats up and gets on down the road. I would really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. It's been my pleasure. Thanks for coming on the show.
Pleasure was mine, my friend. Take care of yourself.
Yep, you too. Bye. Thanks for listening to the American Heritage Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you have, be sure to subscribe, rate, review, and share with your friends. Also, if you wouldn't mind, please consider being a donor. You can click on the support tab at the bottom of the show notes of this episode and every other episode. If you do that, you'll help offset some of the costs that come along with podcasting. Also, I will give a percentage of the proceeds straight back to homeless veterans via the Passageways LTD organization. They help homeless veterans get off the streets once and for all. So consider being a donor today. Once again, thanks for listening.